Maybe. Okay. Welcome to the Daf Pei is in the Maseches Brachos. Sorry, Daf Yomi. Am I not up the right chair? Okay. So there's a story that's told with Rabbi Beryl Wein. He tells a story. I don't know if it ever happened, but it's a good one. A woman comes into shul, and she's never been to shul before. And she's sitting, I guess she has yahrzeit, that's how she comes. And so being that she has yahrzeit, she, you know, wants to try to follow along, and you know, she feels the right thing to do. But she has never heard any of this stuff before. So they're reading the Torah, and she asks the woman next to her, so what are they reading about? And she says, Parshas Vayeshev, crazy story. The brothers versus Yosef, and they go, and they kidnap him, and they sell him into slavery. Crazy story. She's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. What a crazy story. She says her kaddish, she goes home, and then a year later, she comes back to yahrzeit. She's in shul at Shabbos, and it happens to be Parshas Vayeshev again. It's amazing how that happens. And so she asks the woman sitting next to her, she says, what is going on? What's the story about? And they say the story again. Oh my gosh, the brother, and the kidnapping, and the surprise, and the shock, and the goat, and the blood. So dramatic, so unbelievable. And she says, oh wow, this is crazy. I can't believe it. Again. It's crazy. Next year, she comes back again. She asks the woman next to her and says, what's going on in the parsha? What's going on this week? What are they reading about? Tells the same story again. He says, you know, by now, he should have figured out what's going to happen. So if we come to this story, which Vayeshev, Miketz, Vayigash, Vayechi, four parshas devoted to the drama between Yosef and his brother. So if we come to it the same way every single year, we don't learn anything new from it. We are losing something, I think, just like that woman was, in encountering it perhaps for the first time each time. So what we need to do is analyze one of the parts of the story that I think is glossed over. Everybody talks about the drama in the beginning. How could they? Why would they? What's the rationale that the brothers have for selling Yosef? What would be the reason that they would do such a thing? How could they do such a thing? But I want to talk about what happened in the end. You know, usually most stories end with a really great happily ever after, and I think a lot of people when reading Parshas Vayechi, or sort of the end of Vayigash coming into Parshas Vayechi, it's so nice because Yaakov gets to meet his son again. And Yaakov and the family is all together. Okay, it's in Mitzrayim, it's in Goshen, but that's not all bad. That's not so terrible. But as we're going to see today, the legacy of this story not only has what to teach in the early parts of the story, but perhaps more so has to teach towards the end of the story, has what to teach in the end of the story, and perhaps for the rest of Jewish history. So we're going to, in the time that we have, see what I think are some interesting sources on the topic. And let's begin. Let's start with source number one. Source number one is the actual story, the epilogue of this book, of the story of Yosef and his brothers. So we know at the end Yaakov dies, and Vayoshev Yosef is the last chapter of Sefer Bereishis. Vayoshev Yosef Mitzrayim, Ahu ve'achav, v'chol ha'olim ito. Everybody returns to Egypt after having dealt with Yaakov. L'chbar es aviv, acharei kavro es aviv. And so they return after the burial. Vayiru achi Yosef, kimeis avihem. And so the brothers of Yosef see that their father is dead. And obviously they knew the father is dead, but they realize the import, the upshot of what that now means. Vayomru lo, lu yistemenu Yosef. Maybe he's going to bear a grudge. V'hashev yashiv lanu eskal hara'a asher gamalnu oso. Maybe he's going to do to us what we did to him. So they're worried about vengeance. They think that the linchpin, the whole important, you know, the patriarch of the family, Yaakov, was what was keeping them from having some sort of retribution taken from them from Yosef. And so now that he's gone, they think they're going to be in trouble. So Pasuk Tezayim, Yitzav el Yosef Leimar, they sent a message to Yosef saying, Avicha tzivah lefnei Moshe leimar. By the way, Yosef, you know, now that dad's gone, just FYI, he sent a message that it's important for you to hear. He told us to tell you the following. Ko somru li Yosef. Go, say the following to Yosef. This was Yaakov's message, posthumous message to Yosef. Ana, please, sana peshachecha. Carry on, hold on to the sin of your brothers, v'chatasam, ki ragam ulacha. They did terrible. They did terrible to you. They treated you terribly. Vi'ata sana lepesha avdi elokei avicha. And forgive the servants of God. Double expression. First, forgive, and just notice that. Sana pesha achecha, the sin of your brothers. And then again, sana lepesha avdi elokei avicha. Again, a reference to the sin of the brothers, but just somehow or some reason repeated. Fayif Yosef b'damrami lo. And so Yosef hears this and he cries. And so when you read this plainly and you don't ask any questions, it sounds really, really nice. There's a message that's beyond the grave delivered by Yaakov to Yosef. Yosef is told, forgive the brothers, it'll be okay, carry on, move on. Yosef hears this, he begins to cry. And the brothers also, they see Yosef crying, it's this incredibly warm moment, and they all fall on their faces before him. We are your servants, whatever you need. It's a bit much, right? We're just your brothers, but we're your servants. They sort of stress the point. Yosef, Al tiru, do not be afraid. What am I, God? I'm going to deliver some sort of retribution. What am I, God? Ya'atem chashavtem alai ra. You tried to do bad to me, but Elokim chashava l'tova. A God, you know, sort of conspired and undermined your plans to make it that good things happen. I was made the viceroy of Egypt. I was now able to sustain not only the world, but also the family itself. L'man asok hayom hasel achio samrav. I'm able to, based on my role, to allow a whole nation of people, incredible amount of people, to survive. Ve'ata al tiro, do not be afraid, brothers. Anochi chalkel askan v'yastapchem. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to take care of your kids. Ve'yinachem osam yidav ralibam. And he reassured them. He spoke kindly to them. Ah, so beautiful. Such a beautiful ending to the story. Such drama over Vayesha v'miketz, Vayigash and Vayechi. Ah, everybody all gets along. Yaakov's gone and the brothers coexist. Some of the obvious questions, one of the major obvious questions that exists on this passage is, if you were Yaakov and you were worried about this happening, where, you know, after you're gone, your brothers are going to fight, your sons are going to fight like cats and dogs because there was already evidence that they had in the past, and you were worried that Yosef was going to use his power to exact retribution on the rest of the brothers. So if you were Yaakov, who would you talk to about that?
Yosef,
right? Of course, you would talk to Yosef about it because Yosef is the one who has what to do. He's the one who has to be stopped. But that's not what the brothers report. The brothers report that what? Yaakov told us to tell you. It's like, you know, two siblings. And, you know, mom said that you know, the kid made it up. And Rashi says, indeed, they made it up. Look at the next source, source two. Famous Rashi. Rashi says, Avicha Tziva, Shinu Badar Rutnei HaShalom. They literally lied. They lied. They made this whole thing up because of Shalom. Why? Ki lo tziva Yaakov. Yaakov commanded no such thing. And why did Yaakov command no such thing is a topic for a different shir. Rashi says the reason is because shelo nechshad Yosef be'inav. Because Yosef was not, I never suspected, no way did Yaakov think that Yosef was going to take vengeance on his brothers. No way. That's what Rashi holds. Other Rishonim actually hold over here that Yaakov, this is probably mind-blowing, Yaakov never found out what happened. The Rishonim who hold right here that the reason that this occurred is Yaakov never knew that Yosef was sold by his brothers. He thought that some crazy thing happened. He was kidnapped. He was by Midianim. Maybe he was sold to Egypt. And it was never clear. It's such a tragic, it's like a tragic opinion. And here's why. The Das Kanim, and this is not our Shia, but it's so fascinating. The Das Kanim says that when you take a look at next week's Parsha, Parshas Vayechi, so you find that Yaakov, in his dying moments, you know, he has the sons of Yosef who are spending a lot of time with him, Manasseh and Ephraim, but we don't really see Yaakov and Yosef hanging out. You would think after all these years, they'd be inseparable. They have that hug and that kiss when they get together, and we don't really see any conversations until he's literally on his deathbed. Das Kanim says that was because Yosef was avoiding his father. Because he was afraid that what would happen is Yosef would be asked by Yaakov. He was afraid that his father would ask him, so what, tell me the story. How did you get to Egypt? And because he didn't want to tell him what happened, he never wanted to divulge that the brothers are the ones who did it. That's why he avoided spending time with him. So like it compounds the tragedy so much worse. You know, not only were they separate all those years, but even when they were together, they were separate because Yosef couldn't spend time because he was afraid of throwing the brothers under the bus. That's what the Das Kanim holds, and it's pretty remarkable. But it's sort of evident in this passage. Why didn't Yaakov deliver this message? So Rashi says it's because Yaakov thought Yosef was a big tzaddik. Yosef is a tzaddik. He's a tzaddik. He's never going to do anything. But another simple answer might be because Yaakov never knew. Yaakov never knew that it was the brothers who had aggrieved Yosef in this way, and that's why he had never delivered such a message. But in any event, the message sounds really, really nice. And Yosef seems to be cool with it. Okay, guys, no worries. I will support you. I will take care of you. We are good. We are good. We're good. We're good. We're good. And then they walk away and everything's fine. The Rishonim on the page explain why he was not mochel them. You know, he, at no point does he say, I am mochel you, I hereby forgive you, it's okay, he doesn't use that type of language. So the Sfarno for one in source 3 says, Hine pu'ulaschem haisa v'shkaga. You know, guys, you didn't do anything wrong. It was by mistake. Why? Shechashavt emosi l'rodei. You thought I was a rodei. You thought I was coming after you, so you had to defend yourself. It was self-defense. Whatever the rationale, that's a real tzaddik, right? To come up with such a rationale. But he had a rationale that made him justify their behavior and said, you don't need bechila because you did nothing wrong. You did nothing wrong. The Rashbam says the same thing. Rashbam is similar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in source 4, garam lachem v'atem lo poshatem bi. God caused this. It wasn't you. It wasn't you. It was God who made this whole thing happen. God wanted this, and this is like a good thing. It was a good thing because it was important that they end up getting to Egypt, and Yosef ends up saving the world by making sure that they could survive the famine. The Arachayim particularly articulates, Lo machal lahem. He was not mochel them. We do not see language of mechila. So according to these Rishonim, according to the Arachayim, the reason that there is no mechila here is because it wasn't necessary. Yosef felt like you did nothing wrong. There was no problem over here. It's okay. I don't need to forgive you because you never agreed with me. You know, before Yom Kippur, somebody says, you're mochel me just in case I did anything wrong. Right? That incredibly annoying expression. So just in case I did anything wrong, which we only ask to the people who never did anything wrong. But the people who did, we never actually say that to. But when you say that and the person says, oh, you have nothing to ask forgiveness for. That's what's happening here, which is why there's no actual question of forgiveness. And so you close the book on this story and you think, that's it. Beautiful. Happily ever after. The brothers and Yosef walk off into the sunset with Yaakov's instruction, whether it did happen or it didn't happen, but they're all good. And now the Jewish people can all get along. Beautiful. Problem is, we know that that's not true. And one of the ways we know it, before we see any other sources, is something that we say and we read once a year. We actually read this story twice a year. It's the story of the Asara Harugim Malchus. 10 people were killed over the course of either in one generation, over the course of a bunch of generations, and one of them, of course, is Rabbi Akiva. Some of these stories are very famous. And we read this twice a year, once on Tisha B'Av, and once on Yom Kippur. Now, the text of Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur are not exactly the same, but mainly there's a section that's missing in the Tisha B'Av one that we do have in the Yom Kippur one that most people in most congregations sleep through. Because like that's like literally the deadest part of Musaf. It's like the hungriest part of Musaf. It's the blood sugars. It's not good. It's not a good part of the day. So sometimes we miss this part of the Ela Eskera Piyut. But this story is pretty remarkable. Let's take a look at this. On the bottom left of the first page, source 6. The Piyut of Ela Eskera. So it refers to, well just, you know, it's beautiful in the Hebrew. It's also even nice in the English. Ela Eskera B'Nafshi Olai Yeshbecha. These martyrs I will remember and pour out my soul within me. And then the first paragraph we could skip. Go to the second paragraph, the Lamdo. Having learned the written law from those who are compared to heaps of grain from Torah scholars, who understand how to examine the written law, he began to study the Ele HaMishpatim. So this guy, whoever it was, we don't have a name, but he's the bad guy. He's the villain in the story. He decided to do Mavir Sedra. He does Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum. I don't know what it is. He comes across Parshas Ve'ela Mishpatim. And not only that, but apparently he also read Parshas Vayeshev. Right? It's not only that he read Parshas Ve'ela Mishpatim, which talks about kidnap, as we'll see in a moment. He also read Parshas Vayeshev. And so, he reads this, and he reads it with malicious intent. V'chashav mezimas, the Piyot says. And he reads, V'gonev ishu mecharo, v'nimtza v'yado, no siumas. If one kidnaps a person and sells him, and he is found in his hands, he shall be put to death. The punishment of the death penalty for somebody who engages in kidnapping another. Okay, third paragraph. Gava lev bigdolim. The head of the idolater, whoever this villain was, we don't have a name, was swelled with malice. Vitziva lemalos paltero na'alim. He decides, he commands to fill his palace with shoes. Okay, hold that thought. Vikarla asara chachamim bigdolim. And he calls 10 great chachamim. Great scholars who understood the law and all of its intricacies. Now, this narrative assumes that this is all happening in one generation, and there are 10 people being like called in by whoever this is for whatever the reason is. This is a great debate about whether or not this all happened at one time. There's a debate, if we get to, I hope, whether or not this happened at all, whether all of these people were killed in this way for this reason. But let's keep reading. Let's see what it says, because every Yom Kippur we do this, and sometimes we do it. There's so much going on in Yom Kippur, we miss this. Dino Mishpat Zela Ashuro. He ordered, decide this case objectively and don't distort it. Be'al tavasuhu b'chazav ba'omro. With any sort of intentional trickery. Rather, bring it to its light. Ki im hotziyuhu la'amito ula'oro. He's asking these 10 rabbis, paskin in the following shayla. I'm going to present to you a case, and I want to know what you think the halacha should be in this case. And here's the case. Ki imatzei ish gonev nefesh me'achav mebnei Yisrael v'hisamer bo umacharo. Let's say a man is found to have kidnapped one of his brothers from among the children of Israel. Get it? The children of Israel? Not just B'nai Yisrael in this collective national type of way, but the B'nai Yisrael, the literal B'nai Yisrael, the Hisamer Ba'u Mecharo, treating him as a slave and selling him. What is the halacha? And so they have a little bit of integrity, and they answer this person, this villain, they answer the answer. The answer is that he gets Heim Kan Ulo Umeis Haganavahu. They literally quote the verse to him. The kidnapper should be put to death. This is his punchline. He says, what happened to your fathers who sold their brother? La'orchas Yishma'elim Sachruhu, and dealt him to a caravan of Ishmaelites. Uva'ad Na'alayim Nisanuhu. And he did so for shoes. Now, that's not in the Torah. We'll get to where that's from. But that's why he filled the palace in shoes. He's like creating this incredibly symbolic and difficult moment where everybody's standing around all these shoes and probably wondering what's happening with all these shoes. And then the mic drop where the 10 rabbis are asked, so what's the halacha if somebody kidnaps a person, a Jew, and they respond, Mosimas. Ah, so what's going to be? The 10, Kamblu din Shamayim Aleichem. You 10, must accept this judgment upon you, because there have not been any 10 people who were as significant, as important as the 10 of you. And remember, there were 10 people involved in this story, right? Because Binyamin wasn't involved with this. Yosef, of course, was not involved. And that leaves 10. Now, technically, Reuven wasn't there either. But let's go with the 10. Let's go with the 10 number for now. Okay? And so, Kimimei Aboseichem lo nimtzu kachem, v'imhayim mechayim ha'yisidanu lefneichem. And he says, and by the way, if the Shvatim were still alive, I'd bring them into court. V'atem and you, tisu avon aboseichem, you shall bear their sin. Terribly tragic. And it's clear, I think, why this is in the Yom Kippur version of this, and it's not in the Tisha B'Av version. Tisha B'Av just really just gets to the point where they're killed. And this talks about the backdrop, because the backdrop is all what Yom Kippur is about, the things that we do that cause the judgment. And so in Yom Kippur, we're focused on the cause. And on Tisha B'Av, we're focused only on the effect. And so that's why this section is not found in the Piyut when it comes to Tisha B'Av, and it's only found on Yom Kippur. But this seems to point at a historical, tragic legacy that is attached to the selling of the brothers. To which now I wonder, reading that story where I thought maybe they walked away happily ever after, did we miss something? Because if they walked away happily ever after and everything was resolved, then why in the world would this guy, all these years later, have the ability, the right, how would he have the argument, how would he have the theological backing to be able to pull off what happened? Some of the greatest scholars in Jewish history are killed because of this. What in the world? So let's take a step back and see what this story is about. And I just first want to just get through the shoes business. Where does the shoes issue come from? Like, where does that clear? So the Medrash Mishle says as follows. This idea, this piyut. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, source 7, on page 2, not that there are numbers on the pages. Source 7, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Lo nimshichu asara haruge malchus, ela b'cheit mechiraso shal Yosef. The asara haruge malchus. This 10 story, these 10 scholars who were killed, it's because of the selling of Yosef. Okay, Amar Avin. Habe Amar Nifru Asara Mikoldar Vadar Va'adayin Oso Hachet Chaya. If 10 are paid back every generation, that sin would still be there. There's something that there's like a reverberation of Mechiras Yosef that is still around. There's something unresolved about this story that is still in the air. We're going to see soon that it's not just the ten martyrs, not just them who are attached to this difficult legacy. in Bereishis, in Source 8, it talks about the selling of Yosef, going back into the story itself. I just want to explain the shoes point. It says there, L'chuvenim karenu, towards the end, they decided we're not going to kill him yet, we're going to sell him. So in Pasuk of Zion, where it's bold, it says, L'chuvenim karenu l'Yishma'ilim. Let's go sell them to the Yishma'ilim, because they happen to see a bunch of Yishma'ilim driving by, doing, you know, I don't know, they're in sales. V'yodeinu al tehivo, we're not going to actually put our hands on him, we're not going to kill him ourselves, ki achinu v'sarinuhu, because he is our brother, he is our flesh. L'yishma'ilu echav, and everybody listens to Yehuda, so that they shouldn't kill him. And indeed, v'yavru anash midyanim socharim. And so these Anashim Midyanim, it's not clear what the Midyanim were doing, I thought it was Yishma'ilim, but whatever, maybe Rashi says that there was a lot of exchanging, it's from Yishmael to Midyan, maybe Midyan was just like really skilled at pulling people out of pits, because it says, Vayavru Anashim Midyanim, Socharim, these were salesmen, Vayimshichu, they pulled them out, Vayalu Asyosef Ben Abar, they pulled them out of the pit, Vayimkru Asyosef Yishma'ilim, maybe they got on the deal first, they sold him to the Egyptians, to the Ishmaelites, the Esrim Kesef. Esrim Kesef. That's a decent amount of money. Where'd that cash go? Esrim Kesef. He had 10 brothers. Where did the cash go? So listen to this. Pasuk in Amos. Fascinating pasuk. Kol Amar Hashem al Shlosha Pishe Yisrael V'Arba Lo Ashivena. Difficult to know what this is talking about. Where to three or four sins, I will not allow them to return. Al Michram BaKesef Tzadik. For selling for money, a tzadik. The Evyon ba'avorna alayim, and an impoverished one sold for shoes. What's this talking about? So if you look at the Radah, it's talking about nothing. It's talking about general stories, day to day, in the time of Amos, where judges were taking bribes, and it's referring to something which is not historical in nature, it's just of the time. In that time, Amos is describing injustice that occurs in courts, and people are taking shochad, they're taking bribes, and amongst the bribes might be shoes even, and even for shoes, they're willing to pervert justice. And but Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar famously says, and this is the source where the Piyut gets this whole shoe business, the Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar says that what do they do with their 20, their Esrim Kesef, what do they do with that? So each one got 2 shekel kesef, and what would you do with 2 shekel kesef? Buy shoes. And so says the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, Kol Echad, source 10, Kol Echad ben Echad natal shnei kesefim liknos min alayim beraglayim. They went to get shoes. They went to buy shoes. Like DSW was having a sale or something like that. They got the birthday coupon, and they're good to go. They're fine. We got shoes. And so this 20 kesef ends up, they walk around with this, like literally walking around with Mechiras Yosef for who knows how long. And they bought shoes with it. And indeed, the Targum Yonasan in Source 11, on the verse itself, you wonder, like, where did he get this all from? He says, Be'esrin Mayan, D'chsof, V'zabnu, Minhon, Sindalim. Based on this Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar, based on this understanding of this pasuk in Amos, that Amos was referring to Michram Bakesef Tzadik the Tzadik. Who's the Tzadik? Yosef HaTzadik. He was sold for shoes. Bavurna Alayim. He was sold for shoes, and that's where the money went. So that's why this piyut comes full circle. It's the shoes that he's surrounding them with, because I guess whoever it was who killed all these Jews, who killed these 10 Asar Yemalchus, not only read Parshas Vayeshev, not only read Parshas Mishpatim, but he also read a little bit of Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar, a little bit of Amos. He was a very learned person. And so he was using the symbolism of the shoes to make the point to these scholars, this is why he did it. He did it for some shoes. How could you?
Why Dafka shoes?
I have no idea. She asked, why shoes? Why shoes? So
they had no shoes.
I think, as you're going to see in a moment, I think it might be because shoes last. You know, it's something which you hope they last, but they're literally walking everywhere. There's a constant reminder of what they did. And as we're going to see, this is a story that does not go away. Now, maybe I could think of something better, but that's how I see it. But let's see what happens. So in Bereishis Perek Mem Daled, we said it's earlier in the story. Vayomer Yehuda, Manomar LaAdoni, Manidaber Manitzadak, Vayelokim Asavona Badecha, Hineni Avodim LaAdoni, Gam Anachnu, Gam Ashenimtza HaGaviya Biyado. So you figure out from the Gaviya conversation that this is about earlier, where Yosef catches them having stolen the goblet, and Yehuda is attempting to explain, like, okay, so fine, so the person who you found the goblet in a bag, in that bag, that person should be in trouble. The person the person who the goblet was found in their bag should be my slave. The Atem and you, Alula Shalom El Avihem. Go home. So Shimon, whose bag was found, and he's going to stay and be a slave. He's going to stay and go to jail, and everybody else, go home. So on this pasuk, Rabbi Bachya has a very long essay. He talks about all the different elements of the story of Mechiras Yosef, and he says some fascinating things. He says, in source 13, it's worth seeing inside. He says some even more remarkable things if we have time at the end. I'll just share with you quickly. He says, Kvar yadato ki kasonas ha-pasim payu, I'm sorry, I skipped. First paragraph, source 13. Hader ha-kabala, ma shenechtama parasha zos pa-pasuk. The fact that this whole conversation ends with this verse of Alul Shalom Al Avichem. Very poetic. That could be like a Hallmark card, you know? Alul Shalom Al Avichem. Very nice. Says Rabbi Bachya, the fact that it ends with that pasuk. Zeremez la asara haruge malchus. Asher Alul Shalom El Avichem. It actually hints to these 10 martyrs who also went in peace to their fathers, to their father in heaven. I would, you know, it's hard to not use that expression anymore. You know, Alul Shalom Al Avihem, it sounds so pleasant, it sounds so nice. Says Rabbi Bachya, yeah, it kind of refers to these 10 martyrs who were taken from this world and sent to their father in heaven. After they get all intertwined with this chet of Yosef. And he goes on. He says, Kvar yadata, ki kasonis hapasim hayatchilas hasibos, veracious Gilgul Hadvarim, that technicolor dream coat, Yosef and the coat that he got from his father, that act of favoritism, was what began this whole cycle, this whole process. V'nechshav lehem la'achzorius gadol, and it was incredible cruelty. Mashatovlu hakasonis bedam ha'so'ir, this that they dipped it into the blood of the goat, forget about the goat, but the blood of the goat, v'yomrla avihem zos matzanu, how do you do that to your father? How do you say to your father that the kid is dead? How do you do that to a father? Therefore, the punishment for them was in their body. The next generation, right after Yosef dies, we have the beginning of Sefer Shemos, immediately begins the subjugation in Egypt. Immediately. And so, Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar is not only tying the Asara Harugi Malchus to the story, but even the very Shibud in Mitzrayim is tied to this story. Their bodies were also as well, their lives were also judged in the story of the 10 martyrs. He had guf, kisones lenefesh. And so the pain and the suffering that you see in the death, the killing, the murder of these 10 martyrs, the very physical description is because the kisones pasim, that dream coat, that jacket, caused all of the problem, because in that action of dipping it in the blood and being so cruel to their father, that's what they deserve to be punished for. V'alkein timtzeh b'parsha zu, and therefore it says in this parsha, Yud pa'amin, you never noticed this before, ha'anashim. The phrase anashim is found 10 times. It says Rabbeinu Bachya, that alludes to the 10 asara harugei malchus, the 10 martyrs who would later suffer because of the events in this story. And he goes through all of the different times the word Anashem is found. It should have said something else. And then he goes through the 10 names that are those who were killed as those Asara Harugim Alphas. And in the bottom line of the paragraph, he says, V'yesh l'chaladas, shalohaya b'zmanecha, v'lonidunu kulam b'yacha. He seems to not agree with the narrative that we find in Ela Ezkura and Yom Kippur. This didn't all happen in one generation, but it was multiple generations where we are still being reminded of Mechiras Yosef. And I don't know which is worse. Right? Is it worse that like it happens once, okay, it's out of the system? Or is it worse that Mechiras Yosef, it seems, keeps coming up? There's something about it that keeps rising to the surface. So he says, V'atam, the bottom line, V'atam, alu l'shalom ala v'ichem. It could have said, V'ayu yachal lomar, l'chul l'shalom, l'darchichem, go on your way. What's this, go up to your father? Abul ha'parashem avuweres b'achi Yosef l'shah. This parsha, this section of the Torah, is specifically referring to the siblings of Yosef in that moment. But for Romezes, La Sarah Harugei Malchus, the Doros, Asher Alu L'Shalom El Avihem, Shebeshamai. And it's portending this tragic end that's going to occur over the course of many generations. Oy, that's rough. But then, And Beit Habachya explains why. Beit Habachya in source 14, this is taken from later in the story. This is taken from where we began, where Yosef, after hearing the brothers tell the story, oh, Dad wanted you to be mochalas and wanted us to all get along. So Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar says the following unbelievable thing. He says, "Vayef Yosef b'davrami lav." Yosef cried. Tekev sheheskiru lo aviv. As soon as his father was mentioned, b'kbacha legodel ahava nikmu rachamav. His mercy was brought up. His it was a moment. He mentioned Dad with all the brothers around. He breaks down. Bihine achiv b'kshel mimenu mechila. And the brothers said, Yimaychumi. They WhatsApped him a bunch of times. Yimaychumi before Yom Kippur. V'lo be'er hakosav shemachalahem. And nowhere does the pasuk say that he was mochal. And by the way, we pointed this out already. Rishonim saying he wasn't mochal. Most of the Rishonim understand it's because he didn't need to be. He understood that it was b'shogeg, it was an accident, it was well intended, or God ultimately undermined the whole thing, and so therefore there was nothing to be mochal for. It ended up being good. But for whatever reason, he wasn't mochal. Rabbi Bachya points out he wasn't mochal. But Mekarbir Razal Shekol Mi Shachata L'Chaver V'Yasa Tshuva. Anybody who sinned towards their friend, I steal your wallet, and I don't, and let's say, and I talk to God, and I turn to God, and I say, Gozalti, right? You know, I bang my chest, and I feel terrible about what I did. Eino nimcha la'olam, ad shiratze eschavero. We know the most fundamental law, the most fundamental rule in interpersonal relationships is I need to resolve with you before I can move on and do tshuva. I can't just, go to God and somehow shortcut this process. I need to ask mechila, I need to be granted mechila. The Alpha Pisha Hiskar Akasav, and even though in the end of the Pasuk it says, V'yinachem Osam, V'yidabra Alibam, he consoled them, they felt better. Shaniris Bezeh, Shahayel Lehem Ritzui Miyosef, it sounds like Yosef was getting along with them. Mikom Makom, Lo Ra'inu, Sheyazkir, Hakasav, Mechila, B'Yosef. Says Rabbeinu Bachya, we do not see at any moment that Yosef turned to his brothers and said, guys, it's okay. And even though they say, please carry, bear our iniquity, we did a terrible thing, at no point does it say, indeed I will. He does not say that anywhere in the text. The imkain, mesu ba'ansham, below mechilas Yosef. The 10 brothers died without actually having achieved mechila from Yosef. V'i'efsho lehiskaper avonam rakma mechilaso. And without Yosef, it's impossible to get that mechila. V'alkain, therefore, the reason this carries on through history, and according to Rabbeinu Bachya, not in one generation, but the reason it carries on through, perhaps Shiva Mitzrayim, and it carries on through all of these times throughout history, all these terrible moments, in individual generations where perhaps one or two or three of the Asar HaRugim Malchus were tortured and murdered, is because of this unresolved mechila. There will never be a happily ever after, because in that moment, Yosef was not mochel. Okay. Now that's pretty remarkable, right? Rabbeinu Bachya says such a thing, there's no mechila, like everybody else is like, oh, it's cool, whatever, there's no mechila required. But he's a hardliner on this. There was no mechila given, and that's why all of this is unresolved. That's one position. And it's a difficult position to understand, somewhat, because why wasn't he mochel? I mean, it's a good thing to be mochel. There are times, of course, that you don't have to be mochel, but very few. There are times that, if somebody does something to you and they never actually repair the wrong that they did. The classic example in the Yerushalmi is Motzi Shema. Somebody makes up a story about you, and it has legs, and it goes around, and it changes your reputation, and that has ramifications. So unless they could put the feathers back on the pillow, there's no way that, you're not obligated, perhaps, to offer mechila. Is that the case over here? Did he feel like it's something that he didn't have to? Did he do something wrong by not being mochel? Is it Yosef's fault that the Asar HaRugim Malchus happened? Like, what exactly is Rabbeinu Bachya saying? But that's one perspective. He wasn't mochel, and because he wasn't mochel, that is why all of what happens next happens. Okay? But there's another perspective that I want to focus on in the time that we have left. Sefer Chassidim discusses this, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid in Source 15. And he says, actually, the reverse is true. Yosef was a paradigm of mechila. What Yosef did over here was phenomenal. It was actually almost superhuman. He says, "Ein chassid el misha over amidosa." The great test of a human being is the ability to get over yourself. When you have a hakpada, when you are, I have my issue, and this is something which I'm going to stand on principle. There's a great story. My father-in-law told me from Rav Palm. A guy comes to Rav Palm and says, you know, I had this big machlokas with Yankel. It's a big machlokas. And it's about this, it's about that, it's about some money. But I want to tell you, Rav Palm, it's not about the money. It's about the princess. To which Rav Palm responds, so you're saying, it's not about the money. It's just you have really bad midos. The principle, right? Ma'avra midos of means. The tzaddik, the really righteous person, is somebody who's able to, like, not have so many principles. Let other people suffer, other people, and, you know, do what you need to do. So it says the Sefer Chassidim, the classic example, he goes through a classic story where a person is offended and comes back and asks for mechila, and just skip to the bottom line, that's pertinent to us. He says, V'chein b'nei Yaakov, kishachatu li Yosef, macha lahem, v'lo shilem lahem gemula. So too, the brothers of Yaakov, when they sinned at Yosef, when they did terrible things to Yosef, he was mochel them. And he did not exact any sort of retribution. He did not give them payback. V'zeh shorash hachasidus shetzarech la'asos lifnim mishorash hadem. That, here's a paradigm of appropriate behavior, where a person is not supposed to be so exact, and they're supposed to get over themselves b'chol davar, shenemar, v'chasid b'chol masa. That's what we're supposed to be doing. And Yosef is the prime example. So he sees Yosef, he lionizes Yosef for this moment. Not that he wasn't mochel his brothers, but the fact that he was, oh my gosh, that's so amazing. But if that's the case, according to the Sefer Chassidim, he was mochel, and it's such a great moment, and it's happily ever after, so then why do we have all of this baggage that comes through the generations because of this story? It seems to have resolved in the 50th chapter of Sefer Bereishis. So take a look at Esther Rabba. Esther Rabba brings this up. It comes up in the context of the story of Purim. Nobody, I don't know if anybody really ever thought that there was an association between the story of Purim and Mechiras Yosef, but here we go. The Medrash says, HaRotzim Yatzu D'chufim Midvar HaMelech, after, you know, Haman and Achashverosh sit down to plot the demise and the ultimate eradication of the Jewish people. So the messengers go out with a note, V'hamelech v'haman yashu l'shos. They sit down to drink, to eat, to have a little bit, little snack. Amar Rav Chanan says, Man da Amar Rachmana Vatron Hu, one who says that God just, you know, gets over everything. Yeturten me'ohi, should, you know, his insides should be not so good. Okay? Avamarech ruche v'gabu v'yidei, but he takes his time. He takes his time with things. And so the Medrash explains what it means. God says to the Shvatim, you sold your brother mitoch machal u'mishdeh. The psukim actually make clear that they sat down after they put him in the pit. They sit down for a little, you know, a little foreshadowing, a little suda. So too, kach ani asalachem. Later on, much later on, the same thing is going to happen to you. Your children are going to be put into a pit, so to speak, and the villains are going to go sit and eat. And who are those villains? Haman and Achashverosh. Hadah hu d'chsir v'hamelech v'haman yashvu l'shtos. That's why they sat down to eat, because you sat down to eat. It ties these two stories together. If a man was going out in the shuk and he was trying to buy a measure of meat, or I don't know, a size of vegetable, the Persian in that time would be chonek him, or figuratively choke him. Tomorrow I'm going to kill you. I'm going to take all your money. These taunts, these jeers, somewhat appropriate for today and the event that's happening today. That's what was going on in that time. And so finally, the Medrash ends. Amar Rabbi Yisachar, the Kfar Mindi, he was from Kfar Mandai, Mindi, I don't know. Uma in Misha Macha. If somebody who was mochel, the Omer lo atem shalach demosi, if Yosef was mochel, and yet, in all of his mechila, we still see a connection of the story, the threat of Purim, tied to that story, ra'ad heichan himetu kenes, shari ad yimei Mordechai oso onesh shal mechias Yosef kaya. There was mechila, the Midrash says it explicitly, and yet there's still a residue of that story, that they are being punished for it in the generation of Mordechai and Esther, the generation of Purim. So, Kayam Misha'inu Mochel, somebody who is not Mochel, Alachas Kama V'Kama. And so it's a Mechila play over here. Of course you have to be Mochel, because look at what happens even if there's this drama, and then there is Mechila, and yet there's still residual effect. Now, remember, Purim is not the worst ending. Right? Purim is actually a good ending. But there's still something to the story. right? The threat, the fact you walk down the street and they're taunting, that's not easy. You know, that sort of made me think of today, what's happening in anti-Semitism, the things, nobody knows how it ends, nobody knows exactly what happens, but this is still not pleasant. It's still not pleasant, and that's what's being described in this Medrash. That was maybe the tragedy within Purim, even though, of course, Haman did not get his way, but that doesn't mean it was easy. It doesn't mean it was something which was not, debilitating in some way, that creates its own stress and trauma. Okay, but it's still tied to the story in spite of Mechila. Take a look at the second Sefer Chassidim, source 17, as we're closing in over here. V'chein b'nei Yaakov, kishechatul Yosef machalahem. So he reiterates, there was Mechila. The Sefer Chassidim earlier called him a hero for being Mocha. Yesh lahayir. One should raise the following question. She'im kvar machalahem Yosef. So if he was Mochel, Eich Amr, Razal, Amand Amr, how does Chazal say, the Golas Mitzrayim Hayabavur Chet Mechiras Yosef, the Golas Mitzrayim, as you saw, brought in Rabbeinu Bachya, began Gzeras Haman Amr, B'medr Shabashi, B'chet Mechiras Yosef. All of these big tragic events, all these big threats throughout history have to do with Mechiras Yosef. How can that be? How could it be? I thought he was Mochel. I thought it was happily ever after. If we hear the story in Bereshis, everybody's all getting along. Od Amru, he says, Asar Harugim Malchus Bob Asar Shvatim, Big Gilgal. These were the 10 Shvatim, and that also was tied to this story. The Kibbu Ansham, the Gam Lefimah, the Masak Rabinu, the Maharchu, the Asar Harugim Malchus, Hayasar and Tipin, he goes into this Kabbalistic idea. He says, how can that be? Next line, Mechalzeh Kasha, De'ein Acher Mechilas Yosef Klum, Mechvar Machalahem Mechilah Kamura. Yosef was done with this, happily ever after. Everybody got along. Everybody went arm in arm. And you know, walk through Goshen, the streets of Goshen, totally in full embrace. Why in the world is there a residual anything to this story? The Lama Nanshu Kolkach, why are we punished so much for this? The Nira, the Hashvatim Chatu Bishtayim. And so he offers this incredible kiddush. He says that they sinned twofold. Number one, Chatu Im Yosef. What they did to Yosef was terrible. But the Chatu Gam came in Hashem B'mechiras Yosef. What they did forever was also terrible. Their chil Hashem that they created in doing this and going through these events and having this story told forever, that a woman's just going to come to shul, even if the story is not real, and she's going to come to shul, and what's going on? I don't know, brother sold it, but brother's going to sell it, brother? What's drama? How could that be? He says, Mihachil Hashem shahil le'inei paro, four lines in the bottom of the Sefer Chassidim, the Hamitzriyim. Imagine how this is all playing out in Paro's court. I mean, it's like the young and the restless. They're sitting there with the popcorn watching this. You know, they think is it Yosef? Yosef, they know the brothers. They must like have had a clue what's going on. You know, why is Yosef acting? Well, I'm sorry, whatever his name was, Tzachnas Paneach. Why was he behaving the way he was? Like, what's going on over here? And they realize there's some sort of intrigue, there's some sort of drama, and they're just taking this in, they're soaking it up. They're sitting and eating popcorn with butter in the back of the room. Yeah, you can suggest that maybe they didn't really get what was going on. And probably, how did Yosef explain how he got into jail? What did he write in his documents, his refugee documents? How did you get to Egypt, Yosef? What was the story? So he probably just said that, he probably just lied and said that it was somebody else who sold me, some pagan, somebody kidnapped me. I was kidnapped, I was stolen, it was a terrible story, I don't know exactly who it was, I didn't see anything. When we call Malcolm, where it's underlined, somebody must have figured this out. Somebody must have been whispering, it must have been on the page 6 of the Egypt Times, like, you know, theory, someone suggests, Yosef and this new family, brothers, how did he get here? Did they lose him for 10 years? Unlikely. You know, something like that must have happened. The M. Cain. Imagine this story, and imagine this woman in shul generations later, and we take it for granted. Yosef and the brothers. Yosef was sold by his brothers. Oh my gosh, Yosef was sold by his brothers. It's crazy. The imkein mashal mochal Yosef hatzavik. The fact that Yosef was mochal his brothers, that is beautiful. Ahani al mashal chatulo. He forgave how he was aggrieved. Whatever happened to him, he's like, okay, I'm over it, guys. I'm cool. Aval akati pashigibayim mashal chatulo shemayim. But this chil Hashem is still there. Now, we don't look at it in terms of this, right? Because we look at it, this is the Torah, this is the story. This is the story. We've got to deal with this internally. But it's not only something that has to be dealt with internally, it has to be something which presents externally as well. And we're accountable for how things present externally as well as we are accountable for things that present internally. And he says, "Mishum hachu nenchu," and that's why there is so much punishment attached to the story. It's the chilul Hashem. How can brothers sell a brother? I don't care what your reason was. I don't care if you kissed and made up at the end. It just doesn't matter. You have to be accountable for that. And so, were we? Oh my gosh, Shibud Mitzrayim is tied to this. The threat of Purim is tied to this. Nasaru Gimalchus is tied to this. Because like it matters what how you present to the outside, even if you end up just kissing and making up at the end. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he concludes, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Medachikim Chassidov Kachut HaSaira. Of all people, you, the Shvatim, are going to create this legacy that's terrible. The Haim Mifalos Tamindem. It's an amazing thing for those who understand. And so that's how the Sefer Chassidim understands this entire back and forth. He says in source 18, he went one more line, Velekachamar ilu lo naaset l'tova ha'yisi tzrichem mechila. When Yosef is speaking, he says, you did it for the good, so you know, I'm mochel you. Because God ended up with his machinations, it ended up being good for me, it was good for you. You know, either he gave mechila, or like the other Rishonim said, he didn't need to give mechila, in his perspective. But from God, you need mechila, because this story has legs, and this is going to get out. And you know what people are going to say about such a story and its legacy. Okay, so now finally, we'll close with this. Tzor HaMor understands that that is really what's happening in the Pesukim. I want to, if you go back to the first source, down over there. Yeah, so Tzor HaMor understands, I don't have to read the whole thing. But if you go back to the Pesukim on page 1, so I noted that there's sort of like this double expression over here, where first, Kosamu Yosef, Ana, Sa Pesha Achecha V'chat Hasam. Please, you know, bear this sin, Ki Ra'a Gamalucha, because they treated you terribly. Ya'ata Sana L'Pesha Avdei Elokei Avicha. But there's also another sin that happened over here. There's also the Pesha of Avdei Elokei Avicha. We, the servants of God. And they're even referencing the fact that this, you know, sort of got out of control. And what we meant to do as an internal family thing ended up becoming much more than that. It ended up becoming much bigger than that. And so they're sort of asking for mechila for those two things. But unfortunately, Yosef could only provide mechila for one. And so he says in his response that Tzor HaMor understands, I'm not God. Hatachas Elokim ani. V'atem chashavtem olai ra'ah. You wanted bad for me, Elokim Chashava L'tova, L'man Asok Hayom Azom Achiosim Rav. Don't worry about it. I could be mochel you for what I could be mochel you for. But in his final line, the Tzor HaMor says, V'ata, and now, Al Tira'u. I can only account for the ramifications of our story, of our bitter squabble, of our debate. I can only account for what happens right now and right here. V'ata. It says to Tzor HaMor that going forward, it's not me. It's not me. There's nothing, I can't take responsibility for all of what you did. I can only take responsibility for my part. So just to review, if we think about what happened at the end of the story, it seems that according to nobody, did this ever just, you know, happily ever after, everybody walks around arm in arm. There is a legacy attached to this. We read it every Yom Kippur in Ela Ezkara. These 10 martyrs are attached to this story. But as we've seen, so is the story of Purim, so is the very Shibud of Mitzrayim. How could that be if things seem to end so well? So someone in the standard Rabbeinu Bachya says, amazingly, he was not mochel them. And then we learn the ramifications of, you know, maybe unrequited nechila, when we try to resolve things and we do it in the right way and assuming the person is justified in not being mochel, because we know that that's not always the case. A person should be mochel. You're considered cruel if you don't give mechila, but in certain circumstances they do not have to. And our obligation is such that we have to keep at it, because if we made a mistake, we have to do whatever we can to undo the mistake that we did and repair the relationship that we perhaps may have ruined. And so on the one hand, maybe it's the fact that we learn the power of mechila. Mechila is quite so important, that if you walk out of a story without having really resolved the situation as you need to, it is what it is. And that's what's going to happen. That's Rabbeinu Bachya's perspective. But on the other hand, maybe there's a whole other element here that we've missed when we read the story. It's not just a drama between brothers. It's not just an inter-family dispute. But we also, when we have these inter-family disputes, we have to be very cognizant of how it plays in the press, of how it plays on the outside. Because if we're not realizing the Chilul Hashem that we're creating, okay, great, for the moment we had a conflict, and then we resolved it beautifully, and he might be a hero for having done so. But the damage that we did may have been permanent, may have been eternal. And according to Rabbeinu Bachya, it might be something that we are suffering from even till this day. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Thank you.
But if Hashem wanted it anyway to happen, why is it a Chilul Hashem?
Is this the only way? Is this the only way that you can...